crossfades. The Daily Talk Show.
A conversation sometimes worth recording. With Josh Jensen and Tommy Jacket.
It's a Daily Talk Show, episode 238.
Sipping lattes in the BMC HQ. We've got a guest.
Rupert.
Ballinger.
Thank you. How are you going, Rupert?
Good. Thanks for having me.
People might recognise your name. You got a lot of mentions on, what episode was it? Episode
87.
87.
Live from the Outback. Mm-hmm. That's when you had me up at the your family property.
That's right. Yep.
In the middle of Australia. It's close to the centre of Australia.
Is it really?
It's actually no.
I'll correct myself before you do so I don't
Queensland?
Look as dumb. Centre of Queensland. Is what I was saying.
Centre of Queensland. Yep. It's my hometown is Muddaburra, and about 30 kilometres northwest of Muddaburra is the geographical centre of Queensland.
Mm.
Yeah. Home of the Muddaburrasaurus.
There's a lot of just to recap, I flew up to your property. We made a video, but you came and got me from Longreach, which, first of all, I had no idea that Longreach was where Qantas was founded. Little did I know that Qantas actually stood for something. It's an acronym.
Yep.
What's the acronym?
That's right. So the acronym is Queensland and Northern Territory Aerial Service.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Founded by Hudson Fysh, who was a World War I pilot, and a sheep grazier, Fergus McMaster, and an engineer called Paul McGuinness.
Yeah.
So very humble beginnings, but a great story.
What I love seeing when you picked me up and we went to the Qantas Museum, your grandma
She was the first baby to fly with Qantas.
How cool is that? Yeah. There's a photo of her, like little baby being held. Is that by your great-grandfather?
So Melda Ballinger was my grandmother and she's being held by my great-grandmother. And next to them is Sir Hudson Fysh, the founder of Qantas. And they're standing next to the Avro, which was the first Qantas plane.
Mm.
And they're flying from Charleville to Longreach.
I love that name, Sir Hudson Fysh.
Yeah.
It just sounds so legit.
Why did he get Sir?
He started fucking Qantas. That's why he got Sir. Is that why? Well, was it post-Qantas?
I'm not exactly sure, but I assume either his service in the war or starting Qantas.
Yeah.
Do you have a fond connection with Qantas? Like, will you, if you're flying domestically, will you try and fly Qantas?
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, if I can, I think, I'm really proud of it, having grown up out near Longreach and my grandmother's association. My dad was also a pilot. He flew a Cessna 182. I grew up with aviation and I'm really proud that Qantas was started out there, and I love it.
I'm just showing Josh the photo you posted on Insta. If Josh he's off Instagram, but if you had it, you would have seen it's a photo of the Qantas little kangaroo, so the wing, the red tip with the little white kangaroo looking down at Sydney Harbour, and you've said, name a more iconic duo, Sydney Harbour and the flying kangaroo.
That's it.
It's very true.
Rupert, when you and Tommy were in the Outback, you were actually just visiting where you grew up, right? So you actually spend most of your time in Sydney?
That's right, yeah. So I live in Sydney now, but I grew up on a sheep and cattle farm in Outback Queensland, about 150 kilometres north of Longreach.
Mm-hmm.
We went up there to do a bit of work, Tommy and I, and it's 20,000 acres. We've sold it now, actually. We sold it this year, but I grew up there my whole life.
You've got a bunch of mates still have properties up there.
Yeah, heaps of mates still up there.
Yeah.
My sister and brother-in-law still live out there. It's a great place.
I love that we talked about it, like how big your property was before and we're trying to work it out, and you're like, oh, it's basically dumbed down version, 15 kilometres from one side of the property to drive to get to the other, which sounds small, but it's actually so far. You came and picked me up. I thought, oh, he's just – you had a massive party the night before for your mum, was it?
Yep.
And then
yep.
A bit dusty, Rupert rocks up. He's driven 2 hours to the airport to get me. It's like, there's no more, like the classic saying, a country mile.
Yeah.
It's like you don't even think about
nah,
how long, like 2 hours is not that long for you?
No, not at all. Absolutely.
Well, yep. you were talking to Nikki downstairs at the cafe, and she said where she grew up, and you said, "Oh, that was nice and close." And it turns out it was 6 hours away. So yeah. You've got a bit of a different sort of view on geography
on distance. Yeah. Yeah, you just forget about it up there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I went to school in Brisbane, so we used to get the bus every holidays from Brisbane to Longreach, which took 16 hours. So, you know, I've done my lifetime of buses.
Yeah. So you grew up on the property and then you left to go – so you did your primary school from the property I went to.
Yeah. Yeah, so me and my sisters did primary school there on the radio. So it was School of the Air via correspondence.
Is it still a thing?
It is. It is. But they don't no longer use a VHF radio. They yeah. use the internet.
Yeah. You would have loved it, Josh, geeking out like it literally like the truck from you see a trucker. Yeah, calling
CB
all the other
radio.
Yeah, the full CB radio in a little area.
Can I get a radio check, please? Radio check.
What did you used to say?
Rupert with a question.
Can you do that every time you have a question from the podcast?
If you have a question, please ask.
Wait, so what sort of – how much can you learn over the radio?
Yeah, well, that's the jury's still out on that, isn't it? But it was good. You know, like we had a half an hour session every day, and then I'd do my own work in a booklet. My mum taught me, poor mum. So yeah, when I went to high school, I was probably there was a few things I didn't I needed to sort of get up to speed with, but it did the job. Yeah, it was great, and it's an amazing sort of experience. Yeah, you learn a bit of independence.
Yeah. Mm. So do you count yourself as a farmer or like an ex-farmer? Were you ever a farmer?
I guess so. I count myself as a bushy. I grew up in the country for sure.
We looked up something before, and a photo came up of a guy in a Cobra wearing that same blue shirt you had, and we're like, shit, it's you.
So you were quintessential. Yeah.
Yeah,
farmer.
That's so it. I was.
So what is the difference?
he's got thongs on now. No, he's got loafers and he's drinking a soy latte.
Yeah, I know. Things have changed. I've evolved.
What is the? What do you think the biggest misconception for people in the city versus being a bushy? Is that what you called it? A bushy.
Bushy. Yeah.
What's the biggest bullshit misconception that you constantly get asked or that people think?
I think that it's just an extremism of stereotypes, like. You know, although it's a great entertainment, we don't ride kangaroos to school and we're not Crocodile
Dundee. It was pretty
Dundee.
Fun. We did, when we did that.
When we did it was fun.
It was fun when we rode that. No.
I think that's probably the biggest misconception. Like we are not all Mick Dundees.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, they're, it's quite similar to living in the city.
Yeah.
But
I will say, without being offensive,
here we go. I'm so sorry.
I think I even said it after I got back from going up there. I see how the misconceptions happened based on the people I did meet in the outback. So they're like halfway to that person that they portray in the Hollywood movies. But they're not. So it's like, but there is definitely, it's so fascinating, the type. Like when we went to the pub, it blew me away. I should put a photo up. Those two dudes, those young guys, Jackaroos or whatever they were, they were sitting at the bar in Marlborough eating their burgers. You literally think you're watching a movie of the Australian outback and it was them.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You're right. It is a lot different to someone living in the city. I guess for me it just doesn't seem as extreme. But
no, because it's normal. You. It's
I guess so. But I mean now that when I sit in a cafe in Sydney, it's not me.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah, it's.
Is it even a thought process that you had when you're there? I mean you're probably young, you don't really know much
really,
different.
Like it doesn't just come up on my radar. I'm just sort of like I see this city country life fairly well merged,
What about like when do you feel, because say when I go to the US, there's certain things of like going to Starbucks or having certain experiences that I feel like a foreigner in. Like I'm like, oh, I'm an alien in this scenario.
Mm. Yep.
Do you feel like when you go back that some of those thoughts creep in or is it the other way? Are you more comfortable in a pub in the outback or at a cafe in Surry Hills?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Yeah, I don't know how to answer that one. I think there's a little bit of both. Yeah.
Mm. I think you can be both. I don't think I would have I definitely don't have the feelings going. I felt like an alien in the outback. It probably feels more like home for you because it was.
I don't pretend to be anyone else. Like in Sydney, people say, oh, you're definitely from the country, you know, and I'm just me, which is very country.
Mm.
But I don't sort of feel like I'm just an alien in a foreign place. I feel comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I've got the issues. No, but so when you go back, are there certain things that you thought to be true when you're in the country that when you see it in a new context and you're like, oh, this is a bit outdated, or I wouldn't say that, or, and how does that friction work with your mates? Where do you think that you ever get the perception of, oh, City Rupert's back in town?
Yeah, definitely. Like, of sure, you know, you get plenty of banter going on. You know, how's Sydney and how are the lattes and all
well,
that.
It's some gags we've got going. The soy latte thing, and Rupert plays into it very well. We've had a lot of banter around just having a soy latte in Surrey. But it is great. I think it's slipping into the stereotype of the outback. But there's a clear difference. I think it's like state by state. Sydney people
for
are
sure.
Slightly distinguishable amongst Melbourne, Queensland, into the centre of Queensland, the outback, like, you know, Darwin.
For sure. There's a real difference. It's clear. Absolutely.
How weird is it? Like, you think about America, all the different accents. It's a similar vibe. We just don't have it to the extent they do, the southern twang and the New Yorker and the Boston. It's so weird how we're from the same country, but we just it's all just slightly different.
Yep. Amazing. Like, and I was pretty I had no idea about the city until I was sort of a bit older when I went to high school. You know, I just had no idea. And, you know, I remember using Google for the first time, and like, that wasn't that long ago.
And that was last week or the week before.
So it was, you know, there was some big eye openers early on in the day. Probably if you asked me this 15 years ago, it was a different story.
Do you remember a specific moment of
I'm lost? I need
being in the city and saying, "Oh, this isn't the same."
I guess so. Like, just not probably a distinctive, vivid memory, but just, you know, seeing the skyscrapers and the traffic lights and all of that stuff that sounds every day to you guys was just like wow to me. You know, and the cars and It was full on. I when I went to high school, my mum put me down to learn Japanese, which I thought was a bit odd because, you know, I was still getting my head around English. But anyway, so I was in a class with heaps of Japanese boys when I was little, when I was at high school. So that was a real eye-opener.
Yeah,
that was sort of going from one extreme to the next.
And so the difference between a bushie and a farmer is, would city people consider you what you were doing as farming, or like, what's the distinction?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a farmer. We call ourselves bushies. I think it's maybe more of a Queensland thing. You know, you're a bushie. Bushies are in town. You've got the RMs on.
RMs, that everyone in Collingwood wears RMs.
Yeah, they've done well. RMs have done well.
You're wearing them before they were cool.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And so the bushy thing, so the difference between do it like produce, like, you know, growing potatoes and having cattle, what's the distinction there?
Yeah, there's a few differences there's a few different stereotypes in the farming game. You know, there's your graziers who run sheep and cattle for grazing livestock, and then there's your farming for cropping. You know, you're growing crops. It's a different ball game. And then you've got like small intensive growing, you know, vegetables and that's an even different stereotype, a different group of people.
You smile when you said the vegetables. Is in your world of being in sort of the cattle game, is vegetables a bit of a joke?
Well, you know, I think probably from an economic standpoint, not at all. It's probably the other way around. But I think cattle, traditionally, you know, Northern Australia and Queensland, there's a lot of broad acre cattle stations and it's quite rough and tumble, and that's your real, you know, big hat. Heaps of cattle, helicopters, you know, ringers, you know, Mick Dundee stuff.
So ringer, TJ, you mentioned ringer.
Ringer.
So, yeah, that's like a jackaroo. Yeah. So it's sort of the term you give to a young jackaroo on a cattle station,
yeah.
A ringer.
And then you've got a dogger.
There's a dogger there who traps the wild dingoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fascinating. We visited your mate's property.
Yeah. Yeah, Huey.
Absolute legend. Like both Butto. Huey's house and your house, the hospitality beyond belief. You rock up. There was a cheese platter going at Huey's joint.
Yep.
Beers are flowing. Better you guys want something just – and then we got to your place. There's a full spread going.
Yep.
There's something about that in the outback. I think just people from the country where it's – is that a thing, do you think?
Oh, like, absolutely. A huge thing. It's awesome. Like the hospitality. Country people love having visitors and guests because they don't get many.
Yeah,
and they love putting on a bit of entertainment, you know, just being a host and have a barbecue outside or have a big lunch or dinner and have a few beers and sit around the fire, and it's awesome, yeah. Mm. And it's something that more city folks should experience, and I think there's a big opportunity there in the future for tourism and. Mm.
To what state? Huey's house?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're there, Huey? We're coming. Yeah.
Mate, I'd love to take Josh up to Huey. Huey gave the perspective on that. So what he's classified as a grazier? Or?
Yeah, yeah, cattle grazier. Yeah.
So he's got a cattle station.
Yep.
That how many cows would they have at one time?
I mean, they've got a big station. It's about 90,000 acres, I think. They've probably, you know, in a good season, they're running like 7,000 or 8,000 head of cattle, I think. Yeah,
Many. And he said to me that he's a grass scientist.
He is. That's right. He's actually a grass merchant. Yeah, he deals in grass, not cattle.
Well,
the cows
yeah.
are just the marketing vehicle.
Isn't it crazy? Because he has to, like to feed the cattle, he needs to be able to grow the grass.
Yeah.
And feed the grass, and then the cattle eat the grass, and then they sell the cattle. It's a tough life though. I got a sense like he's someone you grew up with. You went to school with, right?
Yeah, grew up. Yep.
What's the because I even on a small scale living in Shepparton a couple of hours away, there was a vibe of people would not escape, they would leave their town and move to the city. And it's like some of them saw it as like this liberation, I've got out of that. Is there a sense, you know, Huey's still on the farm, that's his business, he's you know, successful in what he does. Is there a sense of like, do you look back and go, mates I grew up with who haven't actually left but want to leave, or, you know, is there conversations with mates? It's like, you can do it, or?
There's a bit of that. I think generally, I'm not sure if it's the same everywhere, but generally in Queensland, like a lot of country people or bushies are able to get away, you know, go and experience a bit of city life, whether they work, go to uni there or work there or travel a bit overseas. So there's pretty good exposure there.
Mm.
And then the ones that are really keen go back to the land, which is great. So it's pretty good. It's come a long way, I think. Mm. Yeah.
We had an email from one of our listeners, BK, who Tommy and I have started a ham promotion where we were saying that we're going to give away a ham for Christmas. Which is obviously a very exciting promotion.
Should I read BK's email?
Yeah, you can read BK's email.
He said, I love you both, but all this talk of ham and excessive meat consumption has to stop. Haven't missed an ep, but I may need to boycott the show until the new year, or at least until all this ham talk ends. Maybe you can put something in the show notes each day to warn me of any ham talk. Hashtag hamgate.
So BK's a veggie.
Vegan. He's gone vegan.
Is he vegan?
Yeah, he's gone vegan.
Wow.
It's even harder.
That's really hard. But I could empathise in the sense I tried to – I framed it in, okay, I talk about it as ham. If every single time I replaced ham with a slaughtered pig, I said, oh, we're giving away a slaughtered pig for Christmas, it does change the tone.
Mm.
I feel like you're a good one to maybe talk about animals, having them, you know, on your property, dealing with them every day. What's your take on meat, animals, the relationship with animals?
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Obviously, I grew up with it all, so it was our livelihood. You know, we are sheep and cattle farmers, so that we raise sheep and cattle and sell them to make money to put to feed us.
Mm.
So yeah. it was our bread and butter.
Mm.
So I grew up with we killed our own animals. We ate our own meat, beef, lamb, mutton, sheep.
You'd love it. They've got all of the houses have like industrial sized fridges
to store it all.
I walked in your fridge. Can you get me this?
This should be a trigger warning for PK right now.
No, like even just like for a walk-in fridge is bloody cool.
Yeah, but is there a difference do you see between the meat that we're eating, the industrialized sort of meat consumption versus what you guys were doing? Yeah, what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not an expert in it, so I don't know much about it. But I think, obviously, if you do the research is showing that, grass-fed meat is the ultimate. It's better than more processed, grain-fed stuff. But, it's more of a output thing, I guess. We used to get people out from the city, friends and family, and they'd be a bit, put off by killing the animals to butcher, but it's sort of like, well, what happens when you go down to Sizzler and get a rump steak? Like, where do you think that came from?
Yeah. I think it's like compartmentalizing a conversation around this, because you have the context of it being your livelihood. I went there and there was thousands and thousands of kangaroos, and the thought of hunting kangaroos for a lot of people would be like, you can't do that. The thought for thousands of kangaroos on your property eating your crops is a different mindset.
Totally.
To just killing an animal for the sake of it. It's like it's actually affecting your ability to live. And if we looked at it in a pyramid, you guys are at the top of the pyramid in the sense of having the trickle down to the cities. So it's like what I found fascinating was talking with Huey, who is the guy who is legitimately giving the beef to McDonald's and it goes down the chain to Woolworths and Coles, and hearing and empathizing with him on what it means for him is such a different perspective I'd never experienced before.
Yeah, it's absolutely. It is, isn't it? And it's sort of like, it'd be like it's our livelihood. So it'd be like if you grew up in Melbourne and your parents were property developers, it'd be like someone saying, I think developing property is sort of a bad thing.
Yeah.
Stop doing it. But it's like, well, that's our livelihood. Like, that's how we put food on the table and go to school.
Do you remember when you were younger asking the questions of your parents about what it all means? Did you ever have a moment where it's like you have a cow that all of a sudden you sort of build a bond with and then you have to sort of shoot it in the head?
Yeah, there was a lot of that went on. I sort of learned how to do all that stuff at an early age, just because it was part of our livelihood.
Mm.
But I never really, I guess because I grew up with it, it was never sort of a big conversation.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of all happened.
Do you find now that there is more conversations about this stuff, I think that you bring an interesting perspective to this side of things. Do you think it is do you think there is a wrong way of doing it and a right way? Like, I remember seeing that doco where it's like, what happens when they go to Asia and how the animals are treated, or what is there an element of it that we can be sensible eaters of meat without the clusterfuckery?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I totally agree. Like, I think definitely there needs to be, there needs to be good animal welfare for sure. You need to look after them. I mean, no one loves and cares for animals more than farmers. Mm. You know, they will do anything for an animal to survive.
Yeah.
So to see that footage on the television and that, it's not nice. It's upsetting for farmers more than anyone.
Yeah.
So sure, there is a respectful way to make the process happen, and farmers are 100% behind that.
Mm.
It's just that we can't shoot the messenger. The farmers are just trying to provide for society and feed their own family.
Yeah.
Farming has been in your family how long?
Sort of, 3 or 4 generations.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. Was the ethical conversation happening when you were young? Because I think there's a lot of noise now with social media, rightfully so in some cases, of the fucking debauchery that's happening. Yeah. But was it happening at all? Like, do you remember talking with dad, mum?
Yeah, no, when I was growing up, I can't really remember too much of that talk going on. I think it's very much become more commonplace now. Yeah, definitely.
And I think when I said the when I fucked up the word the first time, and I'll do it again, the different facets of the conversation, because talking to the farmers about animal cruelty is a different discussion to talking to the person that just eats a shitload of meat and has disregard for the process.
Mm.
It's a different conversation. And so I think that's where it can be diluted when a vegan or a vegetarian hasn't quite... They get it. They don't, you know, I think I look at someone who's a vegetarian, BK.
Mm.
Is he doing it for the factor of eating meat and the issues that it has with his body, or is he doing it for the issue, the inhumane element?
What, environmental.
Or the environment. So there's a bunch of these. And I think when the conversation's diluted between a bunch of them, they haven't quite worked it out, it can be hard because someone talking to you, like, have you had a conversation with someone who's a vegan that's been a bit, you've eye-rolled in terms of them just having no understanding of your situation?
Yeah, I haven't had many, but I definitely have spoken to some. And, there's you know, just two different perspectives. Mm. And I think we're getting better at, there's more sort of respect and understanding amongst two parties or two different sides, yeah. Mm.
What about mental health within the country in sort of outback Australia? I feel like we hear of high suicide rates within farmers. Is there certain areas of farming where that is more sort of commonplace? What does that actual conversation look like?
Yeah, so obviously it's been a pretty topical thing. Now it's coming into the spotlight, mental health, especially in rural areas. I think it's pretty widespread. You know, it happens everywhere,
mm-hmm.
No matter where you live in the country. I think, and obviously things like the recent droughts in New South Wales and Queensland have been taxing, and yeah, it's a big thing. It's a big issue. When you live remotely, you don't have the opportunity to communicate enough with the right people.
Is that part of the problem? Like, we hear, like, all the city folk or whatever, all the sort of cities are hearing about this stuff, but is it actually, do you get a sense that there's an active effort to go out to different properties or for that information to reach?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's some great, you know, organisations and social impact organisations getting going now, and they're making a massive difference. Yeah, it's being dealt with for sure, and it's getting better, I think.
An interesting perspective I heard from when I posted the video of you and I on the property, I saw a few people in the comments talking about finally some positive press about the outback. And so when I posted that, there was the issues with the drought in New South Wales into the centre of Australia.
Yep.
And it was interesting because it's like you hear this, like, oh, they need help. There's no, you know, there's no rain out there. But some of the people who live there were like, oh, this is great. A positive spin on something, on our environment. What do you make of that?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like an endless conversation, isn't it? I think, obviously, the media loves drama. So the outback or rural Australia gets a lot of drama.
Mm.
There's real issues, but I think farmers generally, you know, we all know the value of a positive attitude and progress and all of that. So I think farmers just get tired of negative press and downtrodden stories. So it's just good to hear some positive stuff and moving forward. And you know,
maybe the press haven't got the bit right about who's it's for, or actually, so they think let's highlight the issues in the outback to draw attention to the problem, when they haven't, when what they're actually thinking about is what is our audience of people who consume our media, what are they, what's going to get them interested in this? Because a negative story over a positive story, the polarizing story is the negative one.
Yep, totally.
And so
you're dead right. Yep.
But then you can't throw the negative stories out and only highlight positive, because it's a hard one, right?
It
so
is.
Complex.
It is, because you got to, like, you got to be authentic, and you got to acknowledge the stuff that isn't working and the bad stuff for sure. You can't hide that.
And there's probably an empathy gap as well, because it's like if people aren't spending time seeing these people, like there's a difference between archetypes and stereotypes and seeing what we think it is versus actually shaking the hand of someone or actually going out and experiencing that thing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, like having a solution-based mentality is a big thing now for farmers. You know, there's a lot of young farmers that are coming in that have been away living in the city, and they're now coming back to the family farm, and their approach is a solution-based approach. They're looking at, you know, new ways of farming and new strategies, and that's really that's exciting stuff, you know.
Has farming changed much over the last 20 odd years?
I'd say definitely, yeah, absolutely. I think the key fundamental principles will always be the same, because you're dealing with Mother Nature and the land, so that's never going to change. Those principles are sort of timeless. But I think there's more education now. You sort of don't walk out the window and put your hand in the air and make a decision.
Yeah.
Farmers
yeah.
now are really informed, and they're
scientists.
They're scientists. Yeah. They're soil scientists. They grow grass. They know how animals operate. They understand weather patterns. So they're pretty advanced now.
So what was your career process? How did you go from being a young guy growing up at a farm to now living in Sydney?
Yes, so spent most of my high school in Brisbane, and then spent a bit of time back out in the bush. Worked up in the Kimberley and the Northern Territory on cattle stations for a bit.
You think his farm was big? How big was that cattle station?
Yeah, there was a few that were over 2 million acres.
Million acres.
That's crazy.
Some bloke owns the 2 million acres.
Yeah, and a few are owned by companies, but. Yeah, so...
And was that the appeal when you were younger? Was that what you aspired to do? What was sort of on your radar?
Yeah, definitely. So my dad and my uncles and my grandfather all worked on big cattle stations up there, and they were sort of frontier days, you know, in the 70s when the Kimberley was just opening up, you know, the Ord River scheme and all of that. My uncle was a helicopter pilot, and so I grew up hearing all these amazing, exciting stories. Like, you know, it was a bit of the Wild West, you know, it was... It was adventurous. So I was definitely drawn to that. I wanted to be part of that adventure. And I mean, the landscape's amazing up there, the big mountain ranges, and you're riding horses, and it's cool.
The who's your mate that flies the chopper? He's got their Insta account.
Yeah, Sam Chisholm. Yeah, he's great. A good mate of mine from up there. He's a helicopter pilot.
Photographer as well.
And a photographer,
dude, we have to go up there. We need to go in his chopper.
Definitely.
It's like those, like the small ones.
Like the kit sort of deals. Is that what they call them?
Bought it off the internet.
Is it like the ones that are like super lightweight?
Oh, no, this is like a proper Robinson R22 helicopter.
The old Robinson R22. I get a fucking start. Yeah. Mate, the mod on those things are crazy. If you mod them right, you can fucking do some crazy shit with them. Rupert doesn't know whether I'm serious or not. He's like, I can't tell. And so could you actually fly a helicopter if you wanted to?
Not me. No, not at all.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You need
so
to
it's
be
very
trained.
Special.
It's very special. It's not like flying a drone.
Did Dad ever let you fly the plane?
Yeah, I had a bit of a go at the wheel. Yeah.
So he made you think that you were having a go?
Yeah.
On Rupert's property, there's a runway. There's legit just at the front door. Just, oh, yeah.
A dirt
plane
runway,
will come in.
Do you have many people use the runway?
Oh, we do actually. Yeah. We have a lot of people come in and out. Yeah.
What's the most exciting person that's ever used the runway?
Oh. Exciting person.
Different types of planes, like are there?
I mean, we've had some bigger planes, some big twin-engine planes, helicopters. We had a Qantas pilot, ex-Qantas pilot, fly in one time in his twin engine, and that was cool because he was telling us how excited he was about coming and flying into the dirt strip.
Yeah.
And it was they love the challenge.
Yeah.
That's not like a big tarmac at... JFK or anything. It's like got to come in and, you know, he's came in on dark and he was really chuffed. So that was cool.
How do they know that you've got one? Is it on some sort of map and they're like, we need to get to this place. It's only an hour's drive. So if I can just land, is that how it works?
I think they've got it on their aeronautical maps. They're bringing them up on their maps. They can see where strips are and in their GPS. And we obviously told him where we were. So he just put the coordinates in and
it's crazy.
Straight in.
It's so cool. Yeah. Who visited out to like the Muttaburra area? There's been like the Queen, didn't she go out?
The Queen opened the Stockman's Hall of Fame in Longreach.
Yeah.
I think it was in 88 or something.
We were born. You were 88,
yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Our drop.
Isn't it great? The Queen, just like when you're there, you're like, fuck, the Queen came here? It's like so far out.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Prince Charles was there a couple of years ago. They've all been there. Yeah.
It'd be iconic. So fun to film. Just the footage that you got.
Yeah.
While being there was
just
amazing.
Magical look, like you see, you can't, like you just look forever. It's like you're seeing, you just can't see the horizon, you can't see the end of the horizon.
That's right. It's just so open and flat. It's amazing country.
Quiet. My God.
Yeah. Have you done many like road trips?
When I worked up in the Kimberleys, I drove up there and drove back. So yeah, that's like couple of thousand kilometers.
What's it like as a drive? Because I've heard people say, because I've done a bunch of driving in the US, and I always feel like I need to do more exploring of my own country.
Yeah.
Australia, like once you go into the outback, is it what people sort of the cliche, which is like it all fucking looks the same?
Yeah, I guess so.
We got lost, mate. It does.
It does. It was at night. I think so. But it does change. The landscape definitely changes. When you get out into like Western Queensland where Longreach is, you can just see the distinct, it's just flat, open land. You can see it on a satellite map. It's quite unique.
Yeah. Have you seen a big change with things like Facebook? Like I've just come back from 4 months being away and so I'm at my parents' for the next month.
Yep.
And seeing them on their iPads, on Facebook, scrolling, it's just like they're way more receptive of like technology just consuming their life because they just let it in and now all of a sudden they're doing it. Is it a similar thing in sort of rural Australia, do you think?
The adoption of technology.
And Facebook and what does it look how are they using
totally.
It?
Like we've taken to it like a seagull on a chip. Like it's awesome, you know, like country people love technology and it brings us closer together and it's another form of communication and I personally like it. Like I'm working on a technology venture at the moment in Sydney. So I love it. It's exciting.
Do they use it differently?
What he's saying is are people meeting on Tinder?
I guess the thing is that like when I'm traveling or whatever, going to Western Australia and beautiful sunsets, you guys have sunsets, good sunsets all the time. Is it just a rule that if you're out there, don't bother with the sunset because we're all seeing it?
Oh, as in don't bother taking the photo?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of like it's not like icebergs at Bondi where every second person takes a photo. It's better in real life.
What type of content? Like, is it snakes? Like, if you see a good fucking snake on your property, is that straight away an Insta story?
For some. What you're doing during the day is good content. You know, if you're mustering cattle or mustering sheep, a lot of guys do that. My mate Sam Chisholm, the helicopter pilot, he's got some awesome content of in the helicopter sunsets are great, you know, it's all good, it's exciting, there's plenty of things to snap up.
Ringers from the Top End, I think that's the Facebook page. Are you following that?
I think I am following it.
You should get on. Oh, you don't have Facebook, but I get a fix of outback lifestyle from people who live on the in the outback, so it's like all the ringers, they're catching, you know, wild buffalo, and it's unbelievable just the shit that's going on. But there's a community of people who are from out there that obviously are sort of using it as their networking tool versus going down the pub.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. It's brought, you know, it's taken the community online like most places, but it's probably actually stronger than the city because most people know each other and you're a small community. So when you bring it online to social media, it's great. It's powerful because you have that genuine, authentic connection. Mm. You know who's on there, and you know Tommy down the road. And
you saying I don't have 1,800 friends in real life?
What's the relationship? Having not spent time in the outback, what is the relationship with Indigenous people in the outback? Are they working on the farms? Like, can you give us context of what that looks like?
Yeah, so I guess
giving context, that I've got no fucking idea. So it's a very low benchmark.
Yeah, I didn't grow up with any Indigenous, so it was all fairly new for me when I went up to the Northern Territory and the Kimberley. That's when I met some Indigenous. You know, I worked with a few on the stations, and that was really interesting. It was fascinating working with them, and I'm still friends with them on Facebook. And yeah, it's interesting. Like, we probably, as a farmer growing up on the land, I didn't learn much about it. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to sort of get that from an early age. Mm-hmm. So I'm still learning. Yeah.
Mm. Do you get the sense that there is the sort of interest has peaked in that sort of stuff? Like, is there, you know, like, is there, what is it called? It's like tribes. Like, what, like, are there certain sort of groups that are still sort of practicing traditional methods? Are they going and finding out tucker? Like, is tucker on the radar of a farmer?
Oh, maybe not so much a farmer, but I think the Indigenous are still right into that for sure, definitely.
Yeah. What's their way of life? I had the same line of questioning when I was there, because I didn't notice a lot of Indigenous people there. I didn't see any, and your response was that not within this area, so that it's very specific to the region. Like, if you went more to centre of Australia or up to Darwin, up that way, that's where they're more populating.
Yeah,
those areas.
I think there is some more. It's probably more in Central Australia and Northern Australia. Yeah, definitely.
We got amongst the as kids. Maybe it's our age, but I was surprised when I was. When I was a kid, I used to watch this show called Bush Tucker Man.
Yeah.
The dude,
Les Hiddens.
Les Hiddens. So yep. Les is family friends with Reese Mitchell.
Oh, really?
A good mate of mine. He worked that out years later. But Bush Tucker Man.
He's also friends with Russell Coit.
Yeah.
As well.
So the real guy and the fake guy.
Yeah.
The full spectrum.
But Bush Tucker Man. It was a show that was set, where was it? Northern Territory.
He went everywhere. He was a pioneer. He wasn't pioneering, but he was adventurous. He went to the Gulf of Carpentaria, Cape York Peninsula, Northern Territory, the Kimberley. He was amazing.
Yeah, but he'd work out, like, he'd be with Indigenous people working out and learning how to sort of strip bark off a tree that emitted a toxin that would pull the oxygen out of water. So in swamps, he'd break up this bark, and then the fish would float up, and then he'd catch the fish and cook it up. You would have loved the show. It was so good.
Do you reckon I could YouTube it?
Definitely. I've watched it on YouTube. And so you would have had that on VHS.
Absolutely. I loved it. That was one of my favourite videos growing up. him and his old Land Rover fueling up.
And that tune. The music. It was like an opening song that's just like triggering memories.
All the adventures.
No, similar, better.
Yeah, it's just
weird. And it almost, like, when you watch it on YouTube, there's a warp because obviously someone's watching an old VHS, recording an old VHS that had that warp in the sound.
Yeah. He was skilled. He was talented. He would really challenge Bear Grylls. Like, drop them in the outback, Les would be fine.
Yeah, he'd be waiting for catering, Bear Grylls. The thought I had being on your property at night was sitting out on the porch, so quiet. You can look in the distance, can't see anything. Then you might see a light flicker very far out. And basically the drive from Longreach to your place, you're pretty much driving through different people's properties. So it's one main road that is going through different properties. So you go through these big cattle gates. Now you're in Rupert's property, you go on. And what I was thinking is, fuck, have you ever just been at your house in bed and then there's someone in your property?
Yeah.
Because you're so far out, you're like, either they're here to fuck shit up or they're lost. You know, it's like a real eerie feeling. Yeah,
can you tell us a crazy story about anyone that went to the property?
Sure. If you don't have one, make it up.
Or alien stuff. I feel like aliens are more likely to be out in the outback.
Aliens, yeah. We've had a few aliens drop in for some great northerns. Yeah.
His name was Tommy Jack.
Yeah, he's from Melbourne.
Yeah, exactly.
No, did you have anyone stumble into your property? Like you found them living on your property?
No one living on there. There's been some heaps of visitors turn up. Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. It's no crazy stories.
What is the visitors? Yeah. What does that even look like? So it's like you just... Because I guess that happened back in the day. Like in the late 90s, early 2000s, you'd be at home and someone would just come around without like saying anything, right? They're just like knock on the door. Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, just roll in.
You wouldn't really do that now. Like you'd get on Facebook Messenger or make
Snapchat.
Sure you're there. Yeah, Snapchat that you're going...
I'd be offended personally if someone rocked up.
Oh, yeah, what are some of those cultural differences? Like, is that commonplace to, you hear the, we leave our doors open, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, on your farm you can hardly lock up the place. Like, it's just so open and, it's quite a nice, refreshing environment, really. You don't lock up, you don't worry about that. People turn up, it's fine. They might be strangers, but you're friendly to them. You talk, have a conversation, get them in for a cup of tea, maybe have a few Great Northerns, whatever. You know, it's pretty nice. Like it's so different to the city in that respect.
Mm. Overseas travellers, would you ever get people?
Absolutely. Foreigners, cruising around, backpacking around Australia or whatever, like travellers.
Rocking up to your front door.
Yeah.
Your mum would have put it on a spread for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. A few lamb sandwiches.
Did you ham it up? Did you ham it up in terms of like, let's put it on a show for these tourists. Yeah. Let's make
Rupert, a big get out the whip.
well, mate, that's what we did for you. When you
can you control a whip?
I can control a whip, yes. Yep.
Yeah,
I can do the
purpose?
Sydney Flash. What's and the Queensland Sydney? Crossover.
What does that look like?
Sydney Flash is a three. I think it's a five crack maneuver with one whip, and then the Queensland Crossover is two whips. Yeah,
the visual. It's a real visual.
Yeah. It's hard to get a bit of space in Surry Hills now to
to do the whip. So, I mean, what is the for people who are listening who are super interested in the outback? Like, what could you actually? Is there a way nowadays to be like, rather than going to the Great Ocean Road for a weekend, is there an option to, I want to go into the outback? What would you suggest without dying halfway there?
Yeah.
Huey's number.
Exactly. Anyone can go out there. But I think the great thing, I hope it happens more, is city people getting to know country people. Uh-huh. And just
how do you do it? It's hard making friends as adults as it is.
Exactly. You're dead right. Good question. You've got to start somewhere. I don't know what it is. If you just got to think of, I don't know, someone you grew up with or someone you went to school with who may have a friend or a family member who lives on a farm. Get in touch with them. Talk to them.
Are country people doing that? Does it happen the other way where it's like if you're in the country, do you have pen pals? Is that like a standard thing?
Oh, for sure. I grew up having friends. We had family friends in the city.
Yeah.
Definitely. And we'd go and stay with them. It was awesome. Yeah. And they came out to us. So it was great. Like, and I hope that happens more often. Yeah.
It would be hard to have the experience that I had if you didn't know somebody.
Exactly.
Like that's the experience you want. You want the rocking up campfire. Mm. Like it's a legit, that's what your family does.
You want the authentic, genuine, like real life experience of what happens on a working cattle station.
That's why making films, that's what I love about making films. Like I got to go to places like Pakistan and, regional parts of Indonesia. And you just got like you're having these experiences that you would never get the opportunity to have if you were on a tour bus.
Absolutely.
And so it's about like, I think it's about almost, I think for you and I, TJ, it's like creating that type of content, being like, is it a dogger?
Oh, yeah.
Like let's create a video on a dogger. Let's actually like rather than it all being hipster cafes and lattes,
I want to go out with the dogger. He probably wouldn't talk to us though, would he?
Probably not.
Do you know that dogger that we're thinking of?
I don't. I've only heard of him. Yeah.
What have you heard?
Oh, I've just heard he's quite amazing. You know, he's quite animal-like and has the instincts of an animal.
Yeah.
And he goes out and tracks these wild dogs. And pretty amazing stuff.
So these dingoes live on properties, kill the livestock, and just cause chaos.
Yep, they kill the sheep, kill the cattle.
And they're brutal little pricks. They nip on Achilles tendons, let them rot, and they're still alive. And they come in and eat.
Yeah,
them.
They're pretty vicious.
So it's full on. They're dogs. That's absolute right. dogs.
So this guy,
dingoes or dogs?
So this is there's some education there. A dingo you can't kill because they're a native animal. There's a crossbreed. Yeah. You fix that up for me.
Yeah, like there's what you call a wild dog, which is a cross between a dingo and a domestic dog. So
do they look weird? Like, have you ever seen like real mix, like a French bulldog versus a dingo? Like just
poodle.
poodle or no,
dingo.
I haven't seen that extreme. No, there's some crosses. Yeah, you know it's.
But no sort of like...
No, odd.
No, like 101 down... Like a Dalmatian mix.
Bounding across the across the downs. Yeah, no, I haven't seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, so the way they can... So they have a license, the doggers, don't they? Or they have...
Yeah, they're like sort of contracted by the local council, or they operate as a sole trader, where they basically get paid a bounty to track these dogs down.
Mm.
And, apparently some of them, like this guy we're talking about, you know, clears a pretty decent way, a salary, income every year. Probably he'd outdo some investment bankers in the city.
Like hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
We did the numbers. I can't remember what it was. But
yeah.
Don't know what it was. Significant.
It was either 20 mil or 400,000. <I
don't> somewhere between.
Is there, because it's sort of, I'm guessing it's a quite a tight-knit community, or like it's one of those things where it's like there's the hospitality and all the stuff you talk about. I used to work in the media department at the fire brigade. It was one of those things where if you were a fiery and you would go overseas, you could rock up to a fire station and there'd be great hospitality. Is there overlap between, you know, bushies or farmers in different parts of the world?
In different parts of the world, as in, are you talking about?
So, if you go to the, so if you're an Australian going to the States, would you go and say? So, for instance, I remember I did a film on agriculture or whatever. It was about the Murray-Darling Basin and stuff like that. People were talking about they go to different parts of the world to find out, like, they go to Israel for irrigation and stuff
for
like that.
For sure. I've had a lot of mates who have gone over to America and they've worked on ranches over there, big cattle ranches in Texas, you know, Angus studs and all that. Yeah, definitely. There's a real crossover for sure. You're right. Irrigators going to Israel or wherever the cutting edge, you know, farming technology is. South Africa, Argentina. There's trips to – I did a trip when I was at uni to China, an agricultural trip. That was awesome. Saw their farming. There's plenty of that for sure.
Is there certain – when you're buying meat, is there certain things that you look for? Do you say, okay, I want it to be grass-fed, I want it to be this, I'm not going to buy from Coles, I only buy from here?
Yeah, I personally like to buy grass-fed meat if I can.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only real probably thing I like, yeah.
Yeah, and so in where you were and the farm that you – so what is it called, a grazier?
Yeah.
Yeah, so was it grass-fed?
Yeah, so it was all grass-fed, broadacre grazing. So they only ate grass. We didn't feed them grain.
I will just say it's not grass as you know it. It's not your local golf course.
Well, not green, Sir Walter. No.
I saw a lot of red, right? A lot of red dust and stuff in the video. So then when you said they were grass fed, I just imagined this big green patch that you were watering. But it's not like that at all.
No. It's just like the native grass, which is like looks a bit like just a yellow stubble,
like weeds. Almost.
Well, yeah, big stalky sort of tussock.
And
yeah.
Do you actually grow that? Is the idea that you got to maintain it?
No, so it's an annual plant, so it's sort of native to the land, so it grows there every year.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also improved pastures where you seed the soil with an improved pasture that is good, you know, more nutritious or whatever. Yeah.
Mm. How do you know if the cows have enough?
Well, yeah, you can go into this in great depth. I'm not an expert in it, but
yeah.
Some very good, you know, successful farmers, they operate like basically scientists or economists, where they understand they can do a grass budget. Mm. So they can go into a paddock and chop away a meter square and go home and weigh that and work out how much grass or dead matter they have in that paddock. So they then calculate how many days they can have the cattle in there for.
Wow.
It's very specific, and that's where you get ahead, I think, in the farming game.
Yeah. You'll start hearing the rain. It's raining here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Does it rain?
We'll have to send
much?
some bullocks down to Collingwood.
So does it rain at all where you're from?
It does. Sometimes it forgets to. Yeah.
Like how many days? Could you go a whole year without raining? Or is that
absolutely. I mean,
really?
Up in Western Queensland, there's been a sort of dry period for sort of four or five years.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say there hasn't been rain. It's just, let's say the annual rainfall was 18 inches. You know, we might have only had six in the last 3 years or something.
It's crazy.
Below average, yeah.
So crazy.
Yeah.
I think there's a perspective that is great for people to gain from talking to someone at your level. Like the person that eats meat and doesn't think about it in terms of the person out there pulling out a cubic meter of soil to weigh it. Like so much thought.
Yeah.
There's so many steps to what we take for granted.
Absolutely. Yep.
Much thought, yeah.
And I think that the other thing too is you just need to go. This is like, for me, this is like a trigger point, this conversation, to then actually, you got to go out and see it, right? I think that's like the key. I'm already like,
What we are saying is, Huey, we're coming.
Yeah, we're exactly. coming. Get the Great Northerns on ice.
Yeah, cheese board. We'll be there soon. Yeah. Probably a while, but we'll be there.
Rupert, thanks, mate, for coming on
the podcast.
And so nowadays you're just doing tech stuff.
Just working on an exciting new mentoring tech venture in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
So hope to get that up and running very soon.
And then we'll have you back on.
Absolutely. Next year, 2019, back.
What's like the classic rural goodbye? Is it just like, see you later, champ?
Hooroo.
Fuck, hooroo. That's what I say already.
Hooroo.
Got real.
You're a bushy.
Yeah.
A grazier.
Mate, I'll take it. It's the Daily Talk Show, everyone. Hi at the dailytalkshow.com if you want to send us an email. Rupert, thanks, mate.
Thanks,
have
guys.
Have a good one.
Thanks,
catch
you, boys.